Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Self-help from the hip.
Small doses.
We're talking that shit.
Small doses.
And keeping it real.
Small doses.
With me and Nana Seals.
It's so funky.
Small doses. We've been here for 5 years, 270 some odd episodes, but we have never discussed.
Disgust.
We've never discussed like anything in the realm, even like juxtaposed or, you know, up against religion.
I'm shocked. I'm not shocked. I've just been funny.
You're being facetious? Because, yeah, I mean, the thing is that it's very difficult to have that conversation unless you have a clear direction, because you can get misconstrued. You know, it can go into a direction that is, I don't think, healthy. And it becomes just like people being egotistical about like, well, I know this and you know this and I know this, et cetera, et cetera.
Which is unfortunate.
It's unfortunate. So I've been very particular about when I wanted to have a conversation that went into the realm of spirituality and thus landing at faith. Cancers. So we are here with the legendary, iconic.
It's too much.
You think so?
I think it's a little pushed.
Why do you think it's a little pushed?
I think you're pushing a little bit, but it's okay. Let's get into this good stuff. Yeah. It's a little pushed. Yeah. It's okay.
We're here. Y'all know I don't lie. So we're here with the legendary and iconic Kirk Franklin. I'm very happy to have you here.
You don't lie at all. I was chastised on my way here, ladies and gentlemen.
Why?
Because as a black man, I was late.
Why gotta be as a black man?
She gave it to me. Listen, let me tell you something. I have been in this field for over 30 years. I want you to know that today was the first time in 30 years that I've ever had in my entire career.
Really?
Facts. A fellow creative.
Like, correct you.
No, not correct me. Take their belt off.
It's just because I have bass in my voice.
And basically Denzel me in glory. Yeah.
Wildly offensive.
Yeah, that's what happened.
I did not Denzel you in glory.
That's what you did. You Denzel
me in
glory.
Let me tell you what I did.
But I'm happy to be here. Scars and all.
Let me tell you, I asked this brother, okay? I said, I know you serve an on-time guy, but are you an on-time man?
And I lied and said, yes, I was. When I knew I was, but I was trying to impress her. She's Amanda Seals. I was trying to impress her.
Thank you. And I appreciate you. But the most impressive thing is honesty. Because what it meant was that I was scheduling things based on you and your, if you had said to me, I am not really an on-time person, I would have scheduled things differently. And I knew that today was a very jam-packed day,
but I
knew that we only had a small window of your time.
I failed.
No, you did not fail, but I want to let you know the context, because what you also heard was disappointment, because Jeremiah, like the Bible, that's literally his name. We were excited to have this combo.
And at the same time, I also have to admit to you, even as a man, even as a happily married man, it was very powerful and very sexy.
I don't want to hear that.
Okay. It was. Okay. It was very powerful and very sexy.
I don't want to hear it. Because, I mean,
it was very powerful.
That would be lovely if men felt that way, but feel that way when they're not your men.
No. That's how I'm as a man, period. But we need to get into my God and Jesus and the Bible and all that other stuff. So come on.
So the concept of faith, so this came out of, we were trying to figure out like, okay, what do we want to discuss that really encapsulates just not only your belief system, but also the work that you have created that has given so many people a direct path to like preserving their faith, to being able to stand on their faith, et cetera. You know, I often say when I find myself in murky waters, I'm like, dang, it would be so great to be a Christian right now.
How?
Because I could really use some faith.
which is I think the area that becomes problematic of faith is that the reason why it doesn't have a very substantive space in just in the context of modern culture is because historically it has always been more of a spare tire.
Elaborate. Oh, just something that you pull out when you need it.
Yes, yes, yes. I think because it has never become much of the fabric of our DNA, it's because it has become easier to argue God away because we don't really have all the full information of the idea of God or the facts of God or the understanding of the historical context that people subscribe to Christianity through.
Well, I mean, I think it's fair to say, though, that the concept of God is not... I mean, it's not even fair to say, it's just facts. The concept of God is not simply, is not quote unquote owned by Christianity.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
And so when we talk about faith, we can actually talk about faith beyond the confines of Christianity because ultimately faith in a higher power is not necessarily relegated to like how religion shows up in that aspect.
But it's not always quantifiable without things that are more substantive, things that are more fundamental.
Fair.
And I think that there is an academic intellectual perspective to the idea of Christianity that often is misunderstood or
misused,
or it gets lost in revisionist history.
So, you know, for me, so when we met, you know, I forgot
which was amazing.
We did meet at Celebrity Squares. It was a good time.
It was amazing.
And
I'm very impressed with this young lady.
I appreciate being called young lady at 42.
Well, I'm older than you, so I can...
I mean, I won't lie to you. I look, anybody who's listening, you should watch the podcast because I currently look a solid 56.
No, she don't.
This look I'm giving today feels very, she's a young 56. But the dress was definitely giving preacher's daughter. That was the vibe. That was the vibe. Okay. I put on something else and I was like, oh no, you can't wear that. They're going to be like, who'd you think you were interviewing? And I was like, you know what? Let me get respectful. I probably am starring too much shin, but.
Shin. I love shin.
Shin. She's a shill in a shin. So I was saying to you though that I forget what the question was, but somehow it came up for me saying like, well, you know, I'm not a Christian, but I do consider myself spiritual. But I think that
and you can see the lights go off in me, can you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And so then it became, oh, let's discuss.
Yes, yes, yes. It's because that is very much by nature who I am. I'm very inquisitive. I'm very much the type of person that wants to get into the details of people's ideals and how they are wired to believe what they believe. And
where do you think that came from?
It's because I'm very inquisitive even about my own faith. I'm very much a doubter. And so that's why I subscribe to my faith, because in the arguments, I have found enough evidence to believe, because I wanted to find a lot of reasons early on to not believe. It's that my faith began to be questioned. It's because, again, being African-American, it's already assumed that we matriculate to faith because of our culture, you know, and especially in my era. There was an era that you were Christian because you went to church, that the church and your faith, they were sometimes synonymous, right?
Yes.
And that in itself becomes problematic.
Why?
Well, it's because just because you go to church
doesn't mean you're actually subscribing
just because,
to that.
Just because you're in the garage doesn't make you a car.
Fair. We see that all the time. Clarence Thomas be at church, baby. And that's the devil.
Well, when she looked in the camera, she looked right in the camera. You're so good.
Yeah.
All the little nuances that you do are so good.
Okay, I appreciate
that. Anyway, let me get back because I'm a fan. But I do think that in itself has become problematic for people of color, especially people of color, being able to intellectually argue the reasons why they believe what they believe. So everything stays on an emotional state.
Yes.
And so nothing becomes rooted in any type of space that you can intelligently argue the reasons of why.
But you know what I feel like, honestly, Kirk? A lot of times, the arguing of why people believe what they believe in terms of their faith oftentimes feels like it's couched in they're using their faith to oppress someone else. Whenever I'm seeing
often
a lot
it
of,
can be.
Often that's what
often
I'm seeing in terms
be.
Of the dynamic. Like, cause I feel like, listen, whatever you need to get through, do that for you. Like, I'm not somebody, like, even though I am not a Christian, I am not somebody who feels like it's my business to try to undermine, like, oh, well, let me tell you what the real Bible is. And let me tell you, you know, which I've seen that happen as well, where I'm just like, what are you trying to prove right now? Like, this person may have needed this construct. They may have needed this space. They may have needed this faith to simply just get through this life. Like, who are you to come now and try to undermine it because you read some books? Like, that's that actually isn't intellectualism. It's actually just egoism.
Yes, 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 it can be. And I think that what separates the conversation that we're having all has to do with motive and intent. Motive and intent must always be necessary when it comes to, for example, like I asked you downstairs if, because I felt bad for coming late, if I could take you to dinner. Now, I wanted to, is my motive and intent was really because I am a fan. Mm-hmm. I think that you are brilliant and smart, which is always intriguing for me because I want to ask a billion questions. But in my motives and intents, well, girl, let me take you to, let me take you down here to this Waffle House and go and get you, you know what I'm saying?
You did say Roscoe's. It's not much better than Waffle House.
But because it's supposed to be a joke and it didn't land well.
But you are not a comedian.
Well, you could help. Well, you know, you could have laughed and then pulled me to the side and say, next time,
I don't know if it's a joke. You have to understand something about me. I take everything literal.
I know you do. I know you do. And I can see that. It is. And it's scary at times. It's a lot. Yeah. But getting back,
touché.
I think that she said touche. I think the motive and intent is because as a Christian, I am going to want to have moments.
Wait, can we just say what my response was to the dinner?
She said, no, little old Nick.
I did not say that. Because you took it very gracefully. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, she said she's busy. She ain't got time to be going to dinner with people to go to church. So,
the worst.
So as a Christian, you know, yes, my motive and intent at times will read through, as she's looking at her phone, that I'm going to want to have opportunities to share my faith, mm-hmm. to see if it's something mm-hmm. that can be of interest to someone, but it must be done with grace. It must be done with humility. It cannot be done with an authoritarian perspective. And I think that historically, these are the things that have been the crutches and the undermining of what real Christianity was always created to be. It's that there's this grace and this understanding when you fully understand who you were and what you were without this belief system. And so you lovingly present these ideas and truths to see if there can be something that someone may consider and believe. But even through, just the turn of enlightenment, and especially during the Jesus movement of the early 70s, the biggest tool that was used, that was weaponized, was come to Jesus so you don't go to hell.
Yes. I mean, I remember someone telling me that in the 90s.
It's scary.
You need to go. You, Amanda, if you don't become Christian, you're going to go to hell.
Yeah.
And I was like, don't I have to believe in hell to go there?
Wow. Okay. All right. There it is. Bam. and so, you know, yeah. And I think that is what the issue is in general that makes Christianity look duplicitous.
10 points for Gryffindor for the use of duplicitous.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself.
In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so we know that during slavery, Christianity was presented to Black folks in a very specific way.
No doubt.
Right?
No doubt.
So Bible, the slave Bible was very lacking in its totality.
Yes.
It was curated
yes.
to create a certain type of person.
Yes.
And that person was someone that was forgiving, yes. that was looking not at what they have here now, yes. but looking to heaven. And so, yes. you know, this existence yeah. on earth was one that was supposed to be yes. about just serving the best yeah. that you can, because you're really, the good time yeah. is actually going to be later. You don't yeah. got to worry about the good time right now. Yeah. Serve these European, white people. Serve these crackers.
The European imageries of the blue-eyed
yes,
Jesus
the blue-eyed
that looks
Jesus.
Like one of the Bee Gees.
Definitely.
You know, he looks like the lead singer of the Bee Gees. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, all of those ideals
yes.
were weapons. Yeah.
So that being said, do we feel like there is a Christianity, there is a connection to faith that has to be intrinsically different for Black people in America than in just the general concept of Christianity as a whole?
It's, I think that more than that, there needs to be a deconstruction of what Christianity has been over the last several centuries when it comes to the West. Is that Western culture needs a new, Jesus needs a PR person. Jesus needs a PR person. It's because the evangelical movement has been trash, has been garbage. Not all evangelicals, but the evangelical movement.
Just for layman's terms, what would we consider to be the evangelical movement? Like, what is that indicative of?
During the 50s, the 40s, 50s, and 60s, during the rise of the evangelical or the political right, we started to see where white Christians and politics began to be so much intrinsically involved,
attached,
where it was very incestuous. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we had these issues where these neo-white ideals that were fabricated and they were packaged in evangelical white Christianity in America, to the point that even churches were silent on even issues of Jim Crow, civil rights, where even one of my heroes, Dr. Billy Graham, told Dr. King he was being too loud. And so if—
Why was Billy Graham one of your heroes?
It's because I loved his movement at the time of being able to welcome all people to hear the faith. At one time, his microphone was so loud
right.
that he invited all people to be able to hear the faith. There was not a public message that did not have a door open to all people, but to find out privately that there were conversations that were being had on the levels of politics, on the levels of civil rights that were hypocritical
yeah.
to the teachings of Jesus, it was disappointing. And it just also showed the failure and the fragility of his humanity, just like we see the fragility even in the life of Dr. King. So, you know, all of our heroes were flawed, right? You know, we have Black heroes that were flawed. And so, but if the evangelical church collectively would have acknowledged that racism and slavery was a sin, it couldn't have existed in Western culture, because there was a period of time that the white church was so powerful in its political stance and its influence in politics, that collectively, if the evangelical church in America would have stood together and said that this is a sin against a group of people that are brothers and sisters, it never could have survived in the West the way it did. And they didn't.
And they aren't.
And they aren't.
How does that apply to the LGBTQIA plus community?
I think that it applies to all people that are human. Humans should be treated with the level of grace and love the way that Jesus would want them to be treated.
Can you just say it one more time?
Every human being should be treated with the level of grace, mercy and love the way that Jesus would want to treat them. I do not believe in gay churches. I don't believe in white churches. I don't believe in black churches. If you can't go to church and we got to have these side churches where people feel welcomed,
right,
it's a problem with the church. Everybody should be able to come to the same church, get the same medicine.
When you say it's a problem with the church, you mean it's a problem with that individual church or with the community of church?
The ideology of what the church is from a biblocentric perspective.
Biblocentric! Never heard that word.
Let me take you to Roscoe's. Anyway, I'm saying to you that this is so good, isn't it? Isn't this good? Because we can keep the little side things going all the time. I'm saying that when people have to establish churches,
yes,
for people that do not feel welcome in church,
it is
counterintuitive to what the church is.
It's antithetical.
It's because the church is the hospital and all of us got stuff in us that's sick. Everybody, every human has something. You got a toe. I'm quite sure this morning you woke up and one of them toes, an ankle or an elbow or
this
something.
This toe right here. Look at it. See,
see that toe? See? Ladies and gentlemen, she got a toe that ain't like the other toe.
It's bruised because I kicked a box.
There you go. As beautiful as she is, as pretty as this dress that Deborah got on. That was her name. We called her Deborah.
I look like Deborah. I also look like I have a very thick neck.
This beautiful lady name standing in for Amanda. Amanda, Deborah, has a bruised toe. So guess what? She should be able to go to the same hospital with somebody that just got shot. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the hospital. That's what the church was supposed to be for all of God's people, because all of us got something that needs the physician to see.
What do you feel like faith does in terms of healing? How does faith work, in your opinion? If we're going to this hospital, how does the implementation of faith work within us to heal?
Great question. Any doctor that's worth his degree, no matter what he has studied, no matter what he's able to offer, he understands that healing also is this co-participation between the doctor and the patient. Before he prescribes any amount of medicine, what does every doctor say to the patient? Tell me where it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It's because you have to heal to reveal. I mean, you have to reveal to heal.
Okay.
God only heals what we reveal. And so if there are things that I do not either acknowledge or accept that in my life needs to have this trajectory shift, then no matter how smart the doctor is, he can't prescribe what you don't admit.
Tell it to my ex. He can't prescribe what you don't admit, baby. You got to talk to him. Silver and gold. Silver and gold. I'd rather have Jesus.
And I don't know who that ex is, but I'm telling you right now, bro, you a fool. You should have fought for this one, bro. I'm sorry. Next question. Let's go.
Where do you feel like faith is being misused at present? And when I say faith, I mean the concept, right? Because I feel like there is a weaponizing of the concept of faith that is being used. And it's pulling in people who are genuinely like connected to faith. Like it's pulling in people who are genuinely in the hospital, right? Yeah. Who are genuinely saying like, it pulls in people who are, I don't want to use the term weak because that's not what that's what they look at them as.
Yeah.
But it's really just the vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah. And I think unfortunately, that has been the narrative of this organized idea of creating some type of construct of getting into this theistic belief system, right? And we see it early in the Roman Catholic movement and its incestuous relationship with the church and politics in Europe, and people paying for healings and miracles in the early church, you know? And then we see during the Protestant Reformation how Martin Luther was very intentional about making sure that people understood you don't need man to be able to get to God.
Say that again?
Well, we see through the Reformation and we see Martin Luther standing.
So we're talking about Martin Luther, like Lutheran, like on the door. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, thesis. Yeah, that people believed that their only access to God was through the priest. And so it was very intentional to make sure that people understood that for Christians, Jesus was now that door and you can rock with him. And once again, humans, we create this dumbed down context of these bigger moments
yes.
that were supposed to be for everyone. And then we create smaller movements
yes.
from these bigger moments.
Yes.
And so what happened at that moment was not supposed to be this whole new denomination or—
No?
No. Not. It was not supposed to be the move of the Martin. It was not supposed to be the birth of the Lutheran Church.
Right. Yeah, it was supposed to be a
It was a Protestant. It was a Protestant reshaping of that. There should be this door open to everybody.
Right.
That can rock with this guy. That we're saying that we think is dope. We believe there's enough evidence to show that he's God's kid. And it's not something that was just created at a council. Through several people that had this belief system. It existed 400 years before Islam. It's something that we believe has enough contextualized truths that can point that there is enough academic information that we can believe and trust that this dude is who he said he is.
Did he say he was God's kid?
He said it. Yeah, he said it. And I know that there are liberal schools of thought that believe these writings were fabricated to say things that he may not have said, but we believe that there's enough manuscripts
okay.
and there's enough historical documentation to support that when you have, because see, remember, Jesus was not the only person in the Middle East that was making claims at this time.
Okay.
In that ancient world, there were many people making claims of deity.
So it's kind of like how like there's a lot of like MCs who make claims like I'm the king of the South.
Exactly. And then crucifixions were happening every day. They were happening all, you know, 3 and 4 times a day.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. But you know, it was a modern way of penalizing crimes.
Right.
And so if this was the landscape of the era that we were walking in this ancient time, thousands of years of Jewish belief systems were not being changed. You didn't see people changing their diets. You didn't see people changing the different type of clothes they wore, the different days that they worshiped on. This guy, this one guy, in an era where it was paganistic, you know, Rome was a pagan society at this time. And so all of these people now want to start being martyrs and are being willing to die. It's because Nero at the time, the ruler Nero, he was tarring people. They considered themselves Christians and using them as streetlights. So 100 years, over 100 years before, almost 300 years before Constantine, you had people in that era that were proclaiming and professing to be Christians.
Why was it so dangerous to him that he was, why was the concept of Christianity so dangerous to Nero that he felt the need to make examples of his followers?
And that's what I think is so beautiful. I think that right there—
I'm asking, why?
I think that that's what legitimizes the story of the belief of faith, of the Christian faith, is because these were not influential people. Think about it. When you talk about this region of the world and the people that were believing in this space, they did not have the power. Rome had the power.
So what made it so powerful that it was a threat?
Because it was true. They saw—
But what was, I guess my question is, like, what was threatening about its truth?
It's because its truth was going against everything that was antithetical to paganistic ideals and beliefs. If you have a rulership that is having games where the games are killing people for sport.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? And the way that it was treating its poor.
Yes. And the Colosseum and the gladiator fights. Yes.
And then now this belief system that started to rise and bubble that was saying that these are your brothers and these are your sisters and these are your equals and they should be treated with this certain space and that there's a kingdom.
It undermines power.
Yeah. But the beautiful part of who it was coming from, the movement was coming from peasants that had no ability to overthrow the leadership, and it continued to grow, that these people were willing to be martyrs. And again, Jesus was not the only guy making these claims at the time. So what was so unique about this guy that people that had been eating a certain way for thousands of years were willing to change their belief systems of what days they worship, all of these, because, I mean, you know, Jewish customs and Jewish ideals are very deeply rooted and entrenched in the people that believe them. And so these were Jewish people that were not only Jewish by faith, they were Jewish by culture. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They were Jewish by race. That many of them by the droves were beginning to change. All of these things that they've been taught for thousands of years for this one peasant guy that died on the cross in the middle of all these other people. That's what I'm saying, is that in itself is the beautiful miracle of this truth that no one can argue against because it happened. People change their lives, and their lives were interrupted in ways that we had never seen before in anyone that had made these type of claims of deity.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
Is it fair to suggest that there have... Okay, walk with me on this.
I'm going to walk with you in your house shoes. Let's walk.
When I hear the story of, you know, Jesus and him awakening something in peasants, right? What I feel like is being awakened is self-worth, value that has not been provided by society. And that this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. And what I see is we have had centuries upon centuries upon centuries of humans who have decided who is valuable and who is not, based on their own egoism, based on their own greed, et cetera, right? Like people just decided like, I'm a God. And then they were able to convince other people they're a God. What I think is specifically—
That's okay. That's what part of the country we're in. That's okay.
What I think is specifically unique about the story of Jesus is that it was not about awakening these things in people in order for them to take power against other people. It was about being able to have a system of value for yourself that you can exist in this life with, that you can trust in, that other people can trust in, right? That other people can connect to. So for me, God exists within all of us. For me, I see God as an interconnectivity that flows through all of us beings because we are made of magic. We don't even truly understand what we're made of. Somehow we are atoms and matter that is combined, and then our brain is this intricate machine that is still not fully understood, and we give off energy. Like humans physically give off, and we combust, right? We combust. That's why when people come into a room, you can feel like, what's this, right? And so that energy to me is God. For me, Amanda. Mm-hmm. And that is why the connectivity of each other is so important, because we are a higher power that is moving beyond just our consciousness. It's moving outside of us all the time. So when I hear you speak so fervently and so honestly about, you know, what Jesus has been able to awaken in people, I do think there are other people who have come through this expanse of time who have been able to do that for people, right? Like, and I don't think it has been at the same, maybe not at the same level, maybe not the same effect. But I think what is important to me is always just coming back to the bottom line that everyone, I believe, deserves to feel like they belong here. And that is not effective for power structures.
Facts. You know, and I think that both can be true at the same time. As I believe that two statements that I would say is that, once again, he was not the only one making these claims at the time.
But was he the only one actually doing the thing?
I believe that there were others. It's because when we start to see, because you have these other gospels. You know what I mean? That tell these other stories.
Exactly.
And so that's
But they maybe didn't have the same.
They'd have the chutzpah. Right?
The charisma. Yeah. But they didn't have the same connectivity, though.
But
the spiritual source.
But then the other conversation or the other question is then also, then why him? But it's said, yeah.
No, but and, that's yeah, real. I yeah, mean, it's yeah. real. I mean, I think and that's I think the thing so that big. We don't know.
But I do believe, though, is I do believe that there's a fingerprint that you can begin to see, even that it uniquely was the same place that was the origin of the beginning of man, where we see that the first man was found historically and scientifically. We also see the influence that he had in that particular region of the world. And then the forefathers of the faith were also men of African descent. You had Origen, you had Tertullian, you had the very first church at Alexandria. And so you start to see that this started to spread. And we historically, there has not been an individual or a moment that not only impacted the region the way it did. And again, this region where everyone became this underdog that began to take over with influence that changed. We have never historically seen a race of people abandon everything that was intricately wired within them for the sake of not being willing to die for this case for centuries. And they were doing it for centuries. I mean, centuries before the rule of Constantine, we see these poor people make these claims that got them killed. And then we saw the spread of it and the power and the structure of it with our own people, people of African descent. Europe did not influence Africa with Christianity.
It did.
Africa. That's... No, Africa influenced Europe. That there is a guy named Thomas C. Odom, a white man from Princeton, that wrote an incredible book years ago. And it's a brilliant read, How Africa Reshaped the Christian Mind. Africa was the hub and the genesis of the Christian faith. Tertullian, you look at Augustine, you look at Origen, these are all men of, these are African men that were the forefathers of the Christian faith.
I mean, I don't know enough to challenge, so I'm just going to have to take it.
But I promise you, it is brilliant. And I think that that's the problem. See, what you said is so beautiful, is that there is not enough historical academic conversations happening in defense of the Christian faith. So now we have all of this revisionist history.
I want to tell you, though, I want to see, here's the thing. I don't think that the Christian faith would need to be defended if it wasn't so often being used to offend.
Fair.
Because I don't even think it matters if Jesus was real or not, if whatever we're using is helping people. I genuinely don't.
I just don't want him to be limited to this self-help book. That's what I'm saying is that—
No, I don't think it's self-help. I think it's also a life path, right? I think that it's guidance, right? It's a North Star. Mm. It's a beacon. Mm. It's a— Mm-hmm.
Preach.
It's the sensors on your car when you're going, you know, into the other lane, it goes do-do-do-do-do-do, and it brings you so silly. So, we all have different things that, you know, not different things. We all have different methods for that. My issue is that I think we end up putting so much effort into, like, I see this on the internet all the time where people like want to respond with like Bible verses to defend. And I'm like, irrelevant.
Right.
Because ultimately, I'm like, you wouldn't have to defend this if you weren't using this to harm.
And I can't argue against that. I have no rebuttal to that truth. And I think that has been the most disheartening part of the journey that I've had to walk through over the last 2 decades as a Christian, is to see the deficiencies of of the faith that I've subscribed to, that I've given my life to. And I know that as often in the Christian community, there's a lot of things being pointed at culture right now. Culture's the problem of this. Culture's problem.
Well, they've been getting at you about that, right? Like, you doing too much culture with your Christianity.
Since day
Quit
one.
Quit making these people stomp.
Since day one. Step since
people
day
having
one.
Too much fun.
I've been gyrating too much since day one. I've been gyrating too much. I've been
dropping low for Jesus.
Wasn't that horrible? Did you remember that? Wasn't that
Shout horrible? Out to
but it was
Bashir.
Good, though. It was good and terrible. Like it was good, terrible. And so I do think that is the reason why I said earlier that I do think that there needs to be a new PR person in place. Is I think that there needs to be something. And when I say that,
you know what the best PR for Jesus would be? Loudly challenging those who are misusing his image.
Amen.
That is what I believe. And that is me coming. That is me. Amen. That's coming from me as a non-Christian.
Amen.
I am willfully
Amen.
Saying that I am ignorant in a lot of the theology that you're referring to.
Well, no. That's not even theology I'm referring to. I'm talking about academic history.
Okay, so I am willfully ignorant to the academic history. But I think it is. It's okay. For instance, you know, people are very like, oh, Democrats, Republicans are the same thing. We need to, needs to be a new marketing plan for Democrats, right? And I'm like, the marketing plan for Democrats should literally just be shutting down Republicans. Like, you don't need to come with your own MAGA, like, saying and motto. Yeah. It should be action.
Yes.
It should be action. I feel like there was a time where the Black church was synonymous with not only Christianity, but with action.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Like Reverend Shuttlesworth.
Yeah.
Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Like, you know what I mean? Yes. And even if we take it beyond the church and we take it to the nation, you know, there was, it was synonymous with, we're not just teaching faith. Yes. We're not just teaching community. Yeah. We're teaching challenging and action.
And shout out to the nation for what they did during that movement.
Correct.
That they were very powerful in empowering our people to be able to see up above and past the oppression.
And don't y'all say faith without works. How's it go?
Y'all, y'all, us, we say, or the text says faith without works is dead. Yeah, that's what it says. It's so funny, y'all. Yeah, and
I have to say y'all because.
I understand clearly.
Because I think it's also very necessary for people to understand that people who do not believe the same thing can have a conversation and can come to understandings that are still on a high vibration.
There's still precepts. You see, that you still subscribe to the precepts. I think that for someone like me who is committed to the validity and to the longevity of a belief system that has constantly been attacked and destroyed, even by its own internally. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes it has been this cancerous space where we are destroying ourselves by the execution of being hypocritical in the same love that we say that we need and receive that we don't give to others. And so somebody who is very passionate, as you can see, I'm very passionate and committed to how we love people that we have always painted to be unlovable. And I think that that is the most horrific billboard for any belief system that you want people to sign up to.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
So where does the intersection of faith and politics exist for you now? Like, you talked about how there was a time in the 50s where it became, like, you know, very intrinsically connected.
Yes.
And I feel like we are in that time again, like in a very loud way, where they're very indiscriminately citing Jesus as a reason for discriminating against
whoever. As I believe that any gospel that people sign up to, that is not in its totality, you are part of the problem. That there is a loud hypocrisy. God cares about not only the womb, he cares about the tomb. When you only care about a baby that you believe in, whatever your scientific ideal of what the baby is, when the baby is, but after the baby is born, you do not have policies and procedures in place to be able to help the community, to be able to continue to raise the life of that baby, you are a liar and you are a hypocrite, and that is not of Jesus. And so anybody that signs up to any community that does not have the longevity of the heart of what would Jesus do, you are part of the problem and not part of the solution. And that's why I believe that deconstruction of all the majority of belief systems in America, that until we acknowledge the sins of our contributions, we're going to continue to see the demise of what Jesus would be within the framework of culture.
Can I tell you one of my frustrating things that I witness on a regular basis is people speaking for Jesus. People speak, well, you know, this is, you know, God would do da 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 da, and Jesus would do da da. And I'm like, okay, easy. Unless you
it's a little scary.
It is.
It's a little scary.
And it undermines their belief that he is a higher power.
Especially when it's coming from patience. I think that what scares me even more than what you're saying is the arrogance.
Yes.
That we even communicate what we believe the Bible to say, meaning that there's this elitist spirit that we communicate that is very much, you're sick. You need help. You need Jesus. Mm. Let me tell you what you need.
Do you know what I reply to those people with?
What?
May the force be with you.
but let me tell you, that's so scary. Y'all, you guys don't understand all the layers in that message right there. But see, because I know you, now I know of you deeper. Mm-hmm. There's just layers, and that's scary the way you said that. Wow. but I think that it should be very much more of, is that the posture should be, instead of the communication coming from the doctor to the patient, it should be, I'm in the same hospital room with you. I'm in the bed next to you. Mm. And I'm saying to you, yeah, man, I know how that feels.
Yeah.
I can only imagine how that hurts you. Mm-hmm. I've gone through some things too.
Yes.
Let me tell you about what this guy did for me.
Speak on it.
And if he did it for me, I know there ain't nothing in your life that he wouldn't rock with you on. And so this hierarchical type of posture that we have when it comes to sharing our faith, we are doing more damage. It is disturbing. It breaks my heart. And it is not for the longevity of the gospel that we all say that we believe in.
Well, y'all believe in Kirk Franklin. This I know. and let me just also say, like, you are a testament. Just your life is a testament of how faith is tested, right? And
it has not been a perfect life, no.
But you have to keep coming back to. And I think, again, like I said in the beginning, I don't think faith is solely related to just how it connects to Christianity. I think faith is the belief that there is something bigger. Bigger is a loose term, but there was something broader. There is something greater than you can even conceptualize that is guiding the path that you're on. And I don't know that any of us have the right answer. I genuinely don't. And I'm not saying that to undermine you or, you know, the Muslim community, et cetera. I think we're all doing our best based on what we have been given. You have been given centuries of academic study that, you know, convinces you that this is what it is. Mm-hmm. For me, it is more of a feeling that I have. I mean, that may change if I did the same amount of academic study, because I am somebody who is all about the facts, baby. Mm-hmm. Okay. I love me the facts. But I say all that to say that, you know, in this conversation, I know that I'm speaking to somebody who, and I wanted to wait to be able to have this type of conversation with somebody who I know has been tested from many different sides and has continued to exist as themselves within it, right? Like,
that's kind of you. Thank you.
Well, you know, I think there's a reality to just being human, and that it has ebbs and flows and twists and turns, and we're all trying to get through. Some of us are trying our best. Mm-hmm. Some of us are not trying our best, but having faith is like Wi-Fi you can always connect to. And so that's why you always got to pay the bill.
Oh my God.
It can't just be something you turn on when you need it.
Yes, it can't be something that you turn on when you need it. It, you know, and I think that Wi-Fi doesn't work everywhere. So I would say that this belief system does. And I hope that the damage that historically Christianity has done in the West. And I do want people to know that Western Christianity and the teachings of Jesus Christ are not necessarily synonymous.
That right there, that's like a part two.
They're not synonymous. And
you should do a whole masterclass because that, I don't think that that statement is very, that's a strong statement.
Yes, yes. And it's very true. And so.
Because it's those same people who are here in the West claiming, you know, Jesus to using the teachings of Jesus to try to undermine the people that are his kin as well.
Facts.
From the Middle East.
Facts, 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 facts. And so, and again, the origin of Christianity was the Middle East.
Ba-dum-bum. So we have questions from folks. Remember earlier in the show where you were like, oh, she's looking at her phone. Y'all remember that when he said that little slick thing on the side? That's why I was looking to see if the questions had come in. Anywho, we're going to go to the Patreon, and here are some of the questions that are going to get asked that you're going to miss out on if you don't come over.
Are you screaming on the inside? Are you screaming?
We got to find out what's the difference between faith and escapism. We're going to find out, is there an iconic gospel recording that Kirk would love to cover? We're going to find out, has he ever lost his faith, and more. So come on over to the Amandaverse, because that's where it's going down.
The last dose.
Well, folks, you know, I almost went an entire episode without asking this question. Where does therapy fit in with faith? Because I feel like there's a lot of folks who will still say, I don't need to go to therapy. I don't need to engage in other healing practices. I have Jesus.
I am a Black man that prays and sees a therapist for the last almost 30 years.
How has therapy helped you?
It has saved my life. I was on a Zoom just 72 hours ago. I'll be on a Zoom tomorrow. I go to therapy sometimes 3-4 times a week.
Really?
Yes, ma'am.
What do you like about your therapist?
First of all, he's Nigerian, so I have to lean in sometimes, understand what he's saying sometimes. I love him.
Okay.
And once again, he's no nonsense, could give a doggone about who I am, could care less. There's no VIP section.
Right.
And it's straight, no filter.
And it cuts through whatever BS you would create to save you from being real with yourself.
Yeah. But what you also got to understand about your boy, I am wired to want discipline. I am wired that way.
Yeah.
Like, I am wired for I'm not, because you know what a music career is. I am not one that's in the studio that's like, nigga, this hot right here, boy. Ooh, what y'all? You know, I'm very much one that's like, what y'all think? Is it okay? You know, how y'all feel? No, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I've learned that my insecurities a lot in my life have also been my strengths.
Same.
It's because my vulnerability allows me to be taught.
Yes. Yes. Same.
I want to be taught.
Same.
Maybe that's why we got along. Maybe that's why we got along so quick. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Thank you so much. That was a beautiful conversation and long overdue.
Where's my camera? Is this my camera?
Yes. Silver and gold. Okay.
You know, I love the raspiness.